So it was about exactly 1 week ago that the hip hop world was sailing along, and then we got this tragic news, and everything grinded to a halt last Sunday, March 31st of 2019. We lost Nipsey Hussle, man, and it's been something that I've been literally grieving the last 7 days, and we're going to talk a little bit about it this evening. It's Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. A very somber Jay Hicks is back. I think this is the first time we've done a podcast of this nature. We did one. I remember we did one with Mark Hicks. I think it was one of the Mark drafts right after Prince died, I remember, a couple of years ago. But even then, Prince, as great as an artist as he was, he's not a hip-hop artist, and he wasn't somebody that I personally felt a deep connection with. Nipsey Hussle was not that. Nipsey Hussle was everything to me as an aspiring rapper is concerned. He was, of any rapper that I would classify as new-ish in terms of their where they were in their career and their relevancy at the moment, Nip was the artist that I listened to the most personally as a fan of rap music. Since I discovered Nip's music in 2014, he was the artist that I listened to more frequently than any other rap artist. That includes everybody. You know, if we're talking like who's my all-time favorite folks or who I think is the greatest of all time, that would probably be Jay-Z. Jay-Z's been relevant inside these last 5 years, but he had also been in the game for 20 years already. And so, you know, Nip, he had just released his first studio album, Victory Lap, in February of 2018, which I personally felt was the album of the year in 2018. And as I wrote on the website, you can find the column where we summarized the 2018 year in rap, and I called Victory Lap the album of the year. I've sampled his music on the podcast before. I've played his instrumentals in the background of the podcast in years past. Anybody who knows me well knows of my appreciation and affinity for Nipsey Hussle as not just an artist, but for everything that he stood for. And so when I got the news last week that he had been shot, I was actually reacting to it live on Twitter at the time as the news was breaking. My first tweet pretty much said that I didn't think it was real. You know what I'm saying? I didn't think it was real. I was hoping it was just a bad internet rumor. More and more news started coming in, and my tweets kind of got more and more ominous as they went. And obviously it ended with just hurt and sadness. And I wanted to take a moment to talk a little bit about that on the podcast this evening, maybe process it a little bit on the podcast this evening. Nobody was going to help me do that better than tonight's guest. This, by the way, being Sunday, April 7th of 2019. Kenneth Hicks, longtime contributor to Hip Hop Sports Report, author. He's and my brother. He's joining the podcast once again. He's been on the podcast on many occasions. He's joining us again live from Huntington Beach, California, which is, I guess, a stone's throw away from L.A., or is it a part of L.A.? How does that work, Kenny?
We're... in Orange County. Orange County is separate from LA, so it's, you know, I'm probably about, you know, maybe an hour away or so, you know, but it's still in Southern California. You know, it's one of those things where, like, when an earthquake hits, it may hit one area, but all of California is affected, you know, all of Southern California might be affected. And I feel the same thing with the magnitude of the news. And not just the hip hop community, but just in the community in Southern California, it feels like, you know, even where I live, like I said, I don't go to LA that often, you know. But when I, you know, but even just in my passing on Friday, I was clocking out of work late because I had a conversation with a coworker of mine who was in LA on Sunday. And she said she was in that neighborhood maybe an hour or two prior to that happening. And not only that, but then she was, you know, went on to tell me stories about Nipsey and just his relevancy in the neighborhood. And, you know, and she gave me a story about him buying a skating rink, which was funny because then later on when I came home, I was online, you know, just kind of going down the Nipsey Hussle proverbial rabbit hole here. And, you know, I saw a post by Styles T. And Styles T was posting a conversation that the two of them had had. And just the level of respect and dignity that the two expressed, the love that they expressed for one another in their conversations without even ever really having met. And, you know, but the reason I'm bringing that up, though, was that in that conversation that Styles T was having with Nipsey Hussle, one of the things that they referenced was the skating rink, which was then now the skating rink, which was then, you know, like I said, which was referencing back to the conversation I had at work with the lady who was telling me about this skating rink and how it meant so much to the community because of the fact that the skating rink was there. And then when the community, you know, lost it, that was a big loss to the people that, you know, frequented that roller rink or whatever. And, you know, it was a loss to that area. He came in, stepped in with the business owners, and they reopened it. So when now fast forward to the Styles P conversation again, in that conversation, when they're discussing this, he was saying that to Styles P that this roller rink isn't even in his neighborhood. So it was he said it was in an enemy neighborhood.
Oh, wow.
So that means that it wasn't even just about him doing it for his neighborhood. It was about him just doing it because it needed to be done, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, let's
and
back up.
These volumes to who he was as a man.
Yeah, let's back up. So, I mean, we both just dove right in. You and I, we both did.
Oh, sorry, there's a lot here.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to touch on, man. And, I mean, we could, you know, as we said before, independently of the podcast, we could talk for hours about Nip, man. So let's kind of reset for anybody who may have missed the news or not paid attention. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you're well aware. But Nipsey Hussle, 33-year-old rapper from Los Angeles, had been on the scene for a while. He really kind of launched his career in the mid to late 2000s. He had a deal with, I think it was the Epic Records, got out of that deal. He didn't think it was a good deal for him, which is something you'll come to learn to find out about Nip, is that he was very business savvy, far more than most rappers that you'll come across. And then he kind of repackaged, rebranded himself, and then kind of almost relaunched his whole career through the streets and selling mixtapes out of his car and all this other stuff. He put out multiple mixtapes, did a mixtape with DJ Drama called Crenshaw, which really took off, sold that mixtape for $100 a piece, and then he was selling it for $10, and then he was giving it away for free. He did all three as part of a marketing plan, the Proud to Pay plan, to kind of put an end to some of the piracy in music and kind of take ownership back of the artist and the joy that a listener would receive by paying for something that they knew was quality work, right? And so he does that. He's starting to bubble, and things are trending in the right direction. Eventually, he signs a deal with Atlantic Records with his own imprint under it. But, you know, it wasn't any dummy deal, because you know that's not how Nip rolled, right? Anybody that knows him, he wasn't signing any kind of dummy deal. So he waited for the right deal to come along for him and his group, All Money In, No Money Out, All Money In Records, right? So he signs that contract. That was like in, I think, November of last year. And immediately he had his debut album ready to go. He started shooting videos for the lead single. So that came out in December. All of a sudden, the album comes out in February of 18, and it takes off. He's Grammy nominated for Best Rap Album of the Year, which he should have won, but of course he didn't. That's just how the Grammys are set up. They're not set up for design for people like Nipsey Hussle to win awards. But the fact that he was in the building was a great thing to see. And I even told my wife, watching the Grammys, like, look at my boy. He's there front row center with Lauren London on his arm, the actress. And I was just happy to see that he was in the building, because that was the extent of the recognition that he was going to receive on that day. But I was still proud of him in that moment as somebody who had been following Nip for the past 5 years. All that aside, Nipsey Hussle has been doing amazing things in the community, as you just referenced, Kenneth, just in terms of whether it be just from an entrepreneurial perspective, from a just black economic empowerment perspective, and all these things you find in his music. If you listen closely, he's dropping these jewels all in his music all the time. It's a very regular thing with him. But just the economic empowerment, the service, just, I mean, he was volunteering with Russell Westbrook with his Why Not Foundation. He did an event. My wife told me he did an event with the Deltas in L.A., like, because she's a Delta. I mean, like, this dude was not just talking about it. He was being about it. And he was an intelligent guy. He had a past where he was a Crip, but you know, seemed to be turning his life into a different direction, and he was doing all these wonderful things in the community and through his music, and including opening his own clothing store on the corner, I guess, of Crenshaw and Slauson in South LA, which is right in his own neighborhood. He ended up buying that whole complex up and was going to put more businesses in there. He was hiring felons who couldn't find work to work at his clothing store. I mean, this guy had a deeper level of consciousness that the rest of us aren't fortunate enough to have. And then on Sunday last week, he was standing outside of that same store that he owned, that he opened for his own people, and he was murdered in cold blood in broad daylight by a guy that supposedly he just had a falling out with and had a personal beef with or something like that. A guy that he knew supposedly was even a former friend. Some people have speculated. This guy by the name of Eric Holder is the suspect. There's video out there of the events that you can find online, surveillance video. Nipsey ended up getting shot 6 times. This guy, whoever was that shot him, whether it was Eric Holder or not, this coward shot him, came back, left, came back, shot him again, came back, left, shot him again, and kicked him, and then he ran off. Just one of the saddest things I've ever been a part of, just from a fan perspective. I think you, Kenny, and my wife, I've never grieved a celebrity death so hard. Michael Jackson was tough, but this even felt different from that because just the profound impact that Nipsey specifically had on the hip-hop community and his people. Tell me again a little more about what you're experiencing out in L.A., Kenny, just from being so, or not, I guess technically not L.A., but you're near L.A., of course, and just being in California, in Southern California. What are you feeling and hearing from people? What are they saying about Nip? How are they grieving? What's that experience been like being there in the wake of this tragedy?
It seems like, you know, just an overwhelming level of sorrow, you know, just across the board. It seems like everyone that you talk to or interact with on the subject of the matter seems like they just wish there was something they could have done to make the situation go away, or just not turn out the way that it had. And that's from top to bottom. That's, you know, gang members, you know, members of opposing gangs, you know, the police, you know, people like the police are grieving openly, you know, that's an unprecedented thing that I can't remember the time of them, openly, you know, mourning the death of a civilian.
Not a black one.
Not an entertainer. Not a black rapper. No, and they've had plenty of black rapper deaths in Los Angeles. So us to be at a position now where we're all looking around and we're all wishing that this had not been what it was. It just speaks volumes to me of just the man that he was, the legacy that he left behind, the principles he stood on, and, you know, the impression that he left on his community and how that radiated, you know, throughout the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's funny that you said the rest of the world. LeBron James recently was on television. He did an interview with a LA news station, and he called it one of the greatest tragedies in American history. And I heard him say that, and I thought, you know, some people are probably going to be upset with that statement because these days people are quick to get upset about anything. But, and you could argue against whether or not that statement was hyperbolic in nature. But I think you can make an argument that it's not hyperbolic, right?
Absolutely. You know, when you look at who Nipsey Hussle was and what he meant for so many people, you know, the thing is that a lot of people, they come from our communities. You know, we have to champion our own because the rest of the world doesn't, you know. And not only that, but then when you have strikes against you, you know, it's hard to get that second look. It's hard to get that second opportunity. So we have to look out for our own, and we have to uplift our own, especially when we say that they have talent and they have worth. You know, when you have somebody like Nipsey who was here and he was able to, not only do that in himself, but, you know, do that for those around him and not compromise who he was in any way. You know, he didn't hide who he was. He didn't lie about who he was. He didn't give you any kind of false narratives. He didn't sugarcoat things. He gave you the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, in his music. He was very transparent. So for him to give you all that, and then for us to be in a position now where we're looking back at everything, we're just thinking, damn. You know, again, there's nothing that we can really do, but at the same time, you just got to look at it like he really did change the world. You know, and I think that as far as American history is concerned, you know, we're looking at somebody here who was a symbol of hope for our generation in the truest sense. You know, you talk about pulling yourself up by their own bootstraps. He was 100% independent.
Or Chuck Taylor's, you know, he, as it were.
Or Chuck Taylor, yes, pulling yourself up by the Chuck Taylor strings.
Right.
The blue laces, if you will.
Right, the blue laces, and, no doubt.
Yeah, you know, so he pulled himself up by his blue laces. He literally, you know, empowered himself and his community. So the thing is that, you know, that is the American dream. That's the African-American dream right there. And he was a symbol of that. You know, he again, didn't compromise who he was. He didn't shuck and jive. Again, he didn't even have a big Dr. Dre co-signs or anything like that. He just humbly went about his business.
He had no co-signs,
built his brand, right? You know, built his brand and levitated from there.
He really had no co-signs. Like, he was cool. No. He was cool with artists. But, you know, I mean, he had a lot of people that, like, supported him along the way. So, along the way, he got cool with Rick Ross. Along the way, Jay-Z bought 100 copies of his $100 mixtape. Along the way, you know, other people kind of, you know, showed love and support, and he ended up collaborated with Wale, he collaborated with you know, a myriad of other artists. You know, he had Kendrick Lamar on his last album. He of course was down with all the West Coast rappers and whatnot, whether they have Crip or Blood affiliation, right? Snoop looked at him like, mm-hmm, a nephew. You know what I'm saying? Schoolboy Q, absolutely. I mean, he was receiving love from everybody left and right. But to your point though, the impact that he had was far greater than even I suspected. And I'm, like I said, I've been a Nip fan for 5 years, like a hardcore fan for 5 years. And even I didn't anticipate this. And you said something too a minute ago about his authenticity or I think you, what was the word that you used? Transparency, maybe, was it?
Transparency, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so one thing that I always told you was how the reason why possibly the biggest reason why I love Nipsey's music so much was because I believed every single word he ever said on wax, every word of it. And I don't know if that's just a factor of his voice, just like literally the sound of his voice, the type of lyrics that he used, the type of pictures that he painted, the way he lived his life, the way he approached business, the way he managed his own career, the way he, I mean, like, even down to the smallest detail, like, everything just seemed authentic about that guy. The reason why he was at his own clothing store that day with no security was because he was supporting, he went down there to pick up some clothes for his boy that just got out of prison recently. His boy had gotten locked up, and he didn't have any clothes to put on, so he was going to go meet his family for the first time since getting out of prison. And Nip was going to make sure he was laced, you know what I'm saying, with some gear. So he went down to the Marathon store. He didn't call up his bodyguard to do that. He just went down there and did it on his own. And that's when he got, unfortunately. But that's what he stood for. The next day it came out that he was supposed to meet with the chief of police in Los Angeles to try to curtail gun violence and gang violence. Like, this dude was a stand-up dude all the way around. Like, gang affiliations aside, man, I think you can be in a gang and still have a good heart, as crazy as that might sound. And Nipsey Hussle seemed like he was that type of cat, because what we noticed after his passing was the overwhelming outpouring of support and, you know, prayer and just sorrow expressed. And, I mean, we saw it all over the place. We saw it from the entertainment industry. We saw it all over the NBA in particular. I mean, we saw every NBA player was, you know, writing his name on their sneakers before games, shouting him out in post-game press conferences and interviews. This guy left an indelible impact on the National Basketball Association. And like I said, so many other celebrities, entertainers, people who we didn't even know was that cool with him. You know, Ashanti made a touching tribute showing him at her birthday party. Rihanna left a touching tribute on social media. John Legend said he just got done recording a song with him the week before, a few days before, in fact, with Nipsey, and that he was expressing his sadness. And it was just a really somber occasion. all the way around. But what we saw, Kenny, on social media was that it appeared like even a far greater amount of people were seemingly hurt by this tragedy than he ever received support when he was alive, than ever supported him when he was alive. So, for example, the Victory Lap, the album, when it came out in February of last year, it debuted at number 4 on the Billboard charts, which is decent. You know, he sold around 50,000 copies, but by rap standards, Nipsey Hussle was not, you know, he was not a headliner by rap standards. You know, he was not on a Kendrick Lamar type level. No, he was not putting up Drake numbers. He was much lower than that. You know what I mean? Like, if Drake is LeBron, then Nipsey was like Chris Middleton. You know what I'm saying? Like, solid player, puts up numbers. He made the All-Star team, but chances are you never heard of Chris Middleton. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where Nipsey kind of was in the pantheon of rap music from an outsider's perspective or from the mainstream music perspective. But for those within the hip-hop community that really knew the music and understood what Nip was about, he was an A1, A-lister like anybody else.
Absolutely. No, he was 100 grand. He was solid gold. He was, you know, as far as authenticity, as far as credibility, as far as just quality of music, you know, the thing is that his music was, you know, unapologetically West Coast, and you just shut up and you enjoyed it. There's a lot of times where I would, you know, there's other people where I may criticize them for sure, you know, because that, for me, that was not something I was accustomed to, you know, that, you know, a traditional West Coast sound. It wasn't something that I always gravitated to.
We're from the Midwest. We didn't get out like that.
But when Nipsey came through, it was like, hey, no, I need that. I need to hear that. So it was like, hey, I'm going to be listening to Mobb Deep and then Nipsey Hussle. Or I'm going to be listening to, you know, Jay-Z or whoever else I'm listening to, Rick Ross, and you got to throw in that Nip. You know, and that was wherever I was before I came to the West Coast. And coming out here, it just intensified because his star shined brighter and his connection to his community shined brighter. So his music was actually on the radio where I lived, you know, so it changed a little bit, but it never changed. But what never changed was who he was. That never changed.
Absolutely. And we saw, you know, I mean, this story was one of the leading stories on ABC World News Tonight multiple days last week. And I think a lot of it had to do with the tragic nature in which he died. And I know I keep using that word tragic, but that's exactly what it was. The heinous act that was committed and the fact that it was in front of his own store in his own community at the hands of somebody who looked like him, who he previously associated with on some level, I think made it all the more heartbreaking. There's a great article on, is it Blavity.com? Why Nipsey Hussle's Death Deeply Affected Non-Fans Like Me, written by someone named Bossy Pants, which is a funny name, I guess, for a writer. But this individual just kind of detailed why they were not a fan of Nip, and yet they were hurt and, you know, struck emotionally by this loss. And
shout out to Bossy Pants.
Right, right. I mean, it was a great piece. I would encourage everybody to read it.
It was a dope article.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, it kind of put it in perspective for somebody. You know, we told our mother about this. I called my mom at work on the following, I think it was the Monday, or I think it was the Monday after. It was on the 1st. It was the following day. And we talked while I was at work and while she was at work. And we talked about Nipsey Hussle for a decent minute. And even she felt the tragedy herself because she knew how much he impacted her son's lives. Nip was also a father. He was dating Lauren London, had a baby by Lauren London, had also had a child from a previous relationship. Nipsey Hussle's my age. He looks something like me. And he had a son and daughter that are about the same age as my kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, so these things were linked me to him even more so. And it kind of struck home with me even more so. What else do you think, what else were you hearing from people that you spoke to in LA about either his contribution to hip hop or the community or just the overall feeling? You know, could you feel the sadness in the air as you went to work last week and as you engaged with people last week?
Well, you know, and, you know, again, not to speak in hyperbole, it definitely was, you know, one of those situations where there's times in your life where, you know, the air just feels different. You know, when the day after Obama won his election, his first election, the air just felt different. You know, the day that Donald Trump won, the air just felt different. the day that 9/11 happened, or the day after it, the air just felt different. And when Nipsey Hussle died, the air in LA felt different. And it was just a circumstance where, you know, I woke up that day and, you know, I remember the day before you had told me something to the effect of, I hope this was just some kind of stupid April Fool's joke or something, you know, and I wake up the next day and all the headlines are still the same and I'm still trying to wrap my head around this nonsense. And then I hop in the car and I'm driving to work and I'm listening to the radio and I'm listening to Big Boy's Neighborhood and Big Boy is crying on the radio. And, you know, he was telling his personal story about, you know, returning from the cemetery that day and, you know, him, you know, had for his own reasons and, you know, getting the news up after just returning from the cemetery, this is what he has to come home to get, you know, and it's just like, man, he was openly grieving on the radio, man. The city was crying and it wasn't just there. It was, you know, I was getting text messages from people. I was talking to a homegirl of mine, actually, and we, you know, we're actually, part of the reason we actually became cool was just the fact that we were both Nipsey Hussle fans. And I just so happened to be having a conversation with her, in the midst of that. And so she was dealing with that and processing that in real time with me. And again, it just seemed like people were just hurt all the way around, from top to bottom. It seems like fans were hurt, citizens were hurt. Gangbangers, you know, that were not Crips were, you know, were hurt, Bloods were hurt, SAs were hurt, like, you know, as it is from top to bottom. The police were hurt. There's just no winners here whatsoever in this situation. And I just hope that justice is served in this situation. I hope that Eric Holder, if he is found guilty, is brought to justice. The city is taking top priority in this case for a multitude of reasons. So, you know, I just hope that everything happens in the way that God intends.
Yeah, and we would be remiss if we didn't just mention our prayers going out to Nipsey's family and closest friends once again. I still remember watching last year when Victory Lap came out and he did a concert on, in I think it was in L.A., and they streamed the entire concert on Tidal, and he pretty much did the entire album in a concert setting on. And with old songs in addition to the new records from the album. But he did this entire concert promoting his new album that was streamed live on Tidal. And I watched the entire concert from start to finish, man, on my laptop. And I was just so proud of Nip. I was just so happy. Apologies if you guys hear my children in the background crying. I was just so touched, you know, just because I felt like, you know, it's always something cool when there's somebody that you feel like you're in the ground floor on, like an artist that you feel like you're in on the ground floor, and that artist makes it big, or you see the ascent in their career, and you feel like you're a part of that ascent, and when you watch them blossom professionally, it's really special. I even told you the other day that I felt Nipsey had been getting better musically. Lyrically, he's been getting better. Beat selections were getting better. Victory Lap was great. And, you know, the best was yet to come. He started coming with the Perfect Timing record, and then he came out with Racks in the Middle, with the video for Racks in the Middle, which now seems all too ironic, some of the parts of that song. But Racks in the Middle was a solid record, and things were just all trending in the right direction for this guy. Everything was aligning for him. The one silver lining, I would say, out of all of this, and I talked to my wife about this, and my wife, I converted her into a Nipsey fan about 5 years ago as well. She had videos on her Instagram of us rocking out in the car to his music, you know what I'm saying? And this is, she had a video from 2014 where we did that. She had another video from 2018 where we were doing that, and she posted them on the gram. You know, I think the one silver lining is, oh, and I also was, we together, we actually watched his GQ interview with Lauren London on Saturday night. We were watching it together on the couch, curled up on YouTube on Saturday night. We watched the GQ interview with the two of them, where they played like the Newlywed Game questions. And that was Saturday night, y'all. And then Sunday afternoon, he's gunned down. But I will say that the one silver lining that I think that came from this is that I told my wife that, you know, Nip, between with all his service and all the good deeds he had done, and with all the positive energy he was putting out into his music and into the community, and all of the business acumen that he was trying to hit black people to, and, you know, all the jewels that he was just dropping about life and his code and his way that he processed him, the way that he conducted himself as a man.
And health.
And health, right, and health, of course. And we'll get into that in a second. All that stuff, he was kind of operating at one plane. And it's almost like he maxed out on this plane in which he was operating with the level of fame that he had. And as his last act of service, he was taken from us. But all that did was elevate his stature. And now he's on a whole other plateau based on the work that he was doing in the community, his music, the music he was putting out. I've seen so many people on social media say, you know, I never heard Nipsey Hussle's music, or I never really messed with Nipsey, but this made me learn more about him. This made me research him or listen to his music now. And I got to say, I'm a fan now. I've seen that quite a few places. And I feel like that this was kind of his final curtain call. Was his death was untimely, and I literally cried over it. But he's in a different stratosphere now, and it's a shame that death has to do that for a lot of people, in particular celebrities. But that's just kind of how our society operates. But in death, it elevated everything that he did in life to a new level and shined a spotlight on it. And not only does that put him in a positive light, but it puts what he was doing in a positive light, which is far more important, because now hopefully it'll inspire others to do that same thing. How would you feel like this compares to like Tupac Shakur's death, Biggie Smalls' death? You know, I mean, it's a little bit different between Pac and Big, just because, you know, Pac was more socially conscious. Big was, I'm not going to say he wasn't socially conscious, but we knew him to be a great rapper, not so much speaking on social commentary or doing a lot of work in the community. Pac was a little bit different, but how would you compare and contrast this tragedy versus those, Kenny, given that you were a little bit older? You were in high school when Pac and Biggie lost their lives, and I was in middle school at the time, but how would you kind of reconcile all that?
One of those things where you don't want to ever want to compare grief or compare tragedies.
Right, right.
You know, and that's obviously, I know that's not what you're suggesting that I do. You know, however, I think that, you know, in a situation like this, you start to look at the parallels of the situations, and you look at just what they meant to, you know, to the hip hop community, you know, to their communities, particularly, you know, to California. The thing is that as far as, you know, prior to Tupac, I don't know that there was that level of just like universal pride that California has now. Like, I'm absent-minded that because of my age or where I was living, you know, regionally at the time. But it seemed like, you know, there was California, and then there was California Love California. You know, and it seems like from that point forward, it's been knocking out here, you know.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's a universal kind of understanding of, hey, we're Californian, this is a great place,
right,
you love being here, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I think that I personally would attribute a lot of that to Tupac Shakur. I think that with the situation he was in, you know, I think that, you know, it's a different world now. But I think that, you know, what Nip was trying to do as far as, you know, clearing up some of, rectifying gang violence in the city and bringing together, you know, rival gangs to, you know, sit down and get some of these things hashed out finally, for some kind of long-term truces, you know, things like that. He was doing things actively in the community that were impacting people on a real level. It's one thing when you hear all the stories of, hey, so-and-so gave money to, you know, start a school somewhere. Or, oh, I gave money for some books or some computers.
That
sounds good, but yeah, if you've never seen a book, never seen a computer, never seen the kids, it kind of doesn't really hit you, you know? But with Nip, everything was in your face, and everything was real, and everything was authentic, and you could see it, you know, and he was actively doing it, and he never stopped doing it. So it was wasn't for show. So it was just like, in the midst of him telling you, you know, giving you jewels about life, or giving you jewels about entrepreneurship or ownership or empowerment, or giving you jewels about health, you know, in the midst, or just telling you about his dope-ass album that he has coming out, or telling you about his, you know, whatever else, in the midst of all of that, he was still letting you know, like, hey, there's, you know, there's a way here. And, you know, I just think that, in the end, I think that we just look back at this as something where we can be proud that Nip was one of us, you know, and he was the best of us. He was us at our best, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, when you look at the things that we all have shortcomings in our lives, you know, for various reasons. And I'm not saying that he had any shortcomings. I'm just saying that, you know, he was just very honest about who he was, good or bad. People can accept it as they did. But with that, you know, he brought so much good to the table with it that it couldn't be denied. You know, and that will always live on.
There was a really dope piece they did on Nip on ABC Nightline. I think it was on April 4th, so you guys can go to their website and look that up. But they were interviewing people in the community about Nip, and one dude said he was like the hood Barack Obama, and another dude said, you know, they interviewed him, and he was going on and on about all the great work that Nip had done in the community, who they affectionately called Neighborhood Nip, of course. And then they said, and then the person interviewing him says, so would you say that Nipsey was like a bridge? You know, because trying to convey that he's like bridging hip hop to this idea of service and giving back and stuff like that, and just being magnanimous in general. And he says, would you say Nip is like the bridge? And the guy says, Nipsey was the architect of the bridge. You know, that kind of puts it in perspective. The social media element of all this, Kenny. Where do you shake out on all this? Because there were so many different things that we saw come out of this this event, between people who were taking footage of the video and taking photos of it, and then the immediate backlash of all those folks who were saying, quit sharing that stuff, quit sharing that. Like, there's always like this contingent of people that are just screaming into the ether at these people who are retweeting this stuff or sharing it on social media. That we've seen that happen, and so that dynamic was happening. We saw people debating about whether or not there was a conspiracy, whether or not, you know, because he was aligning himself with Dr. Sebi and his teachings, that Nipsey was a target of the government or the Illuminati. And then we saw people getting mad at those people for even having a conspiracy to begin with. Like, how could you have this conspiracy theory and be talking about this when the man is dying and it doesn't matter or whatever, or y'all. And then when the story about Eric Holder came out, then it became, man, y'all are stupid. Y'all was out here talking about conspiracy. I hope y'all realize how dumb y'all look now. And there's like this weird back and forth thing going, and all the while this guy is still dead, unfortunately, you know what I'm saying? And then we saw all this stuff with Kodak Black over the last couple days, where he said some disrespectful stuff about Lauren London. All these other OG rappers, T.I. and The Game and others, are coming out trying to take shots at Kodak Black now. It's like, this has been like a really social event. You know what I'm saying? Like, I guess the presence of social media has kind of changed the dynamic of this tragic event, that in a way that we haven't really seen it happen before. Like, we literally saw it unfold on social media, and then we saw all these offshoots of all these debates and arguments about sharing video and footage of the events, and whether or not we should talk about conspiracies and things like that, or just the amount of overwhelming love and support that people showed Nip, in spite of the fact that, as I said earlier, he was never that popular of an artist. And then you saw a backlash of that, people saying, well, if y'all weren't fans of him before, why y'all showing him all this love now? Where do you come out on all of that stuff? I know that's a mouthful.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot going on in there, obviously. And, you know, I mean, truthfully, at the heart of this, you know, being my brother, you actually do know where I shake out on a lot of this. The heart of the truth of the matter for me is that, you know, none of this matters, because the only thing that matters here is that a man is dead. A father is dead. I don't know if he's a husband, fiance, whatever, but
he had a family. Yeah.
He was a family man. He was a business owner. He was a family man. He was protecting his business. He was standing out in front of his business and asking people who weren't buying products that they needed to leave. He was doing nothing wrong. If anything, he was doing the right thing. So,
there was even people criticizing it in every way.
It was just like, it made it frustrating for me, because, you know, I'm sitting here looking at it like, none of this really matters when you look at the fact that, you know, this man is gone, you know. And again, selfishly, I felt selfish just looking at it from the perspective of being like, oh man, I wish this man was here, at the same time, I wish, you know, we would still be able to hear his wisdom and his great music, you know, because it's timeless. But that's the type of things that were going through my mind, and I felt guilty for that. You know, I felt a level of shame for that, you know, because I'm thinking, like, who am I to even be harboring this kind of thoughts at all when there's a great omission here? But then when you have these people on social media who are just saying outlandish things just to be a part of the conversation, or saying things to fight people who are saying outlandish things, or people who are, you know, harboring conspiracy theories, or people who are guilting people for harboring conspiracy theories, and you have all this, you know, going on. There's just this quagmire of nonsense, and it's like, why are we not looking at the greater picture here, and why are we not focusing on what's important? Because there's children here who don't have a dad, and that's the saddest thing of all to me.
Right. Right, I would agree wholeheartedly, and that's something that I told you. Like, my overwhelming feeling was just like that they shot my nigga, man, and he's still gone. Like, regardless of all this stuff, regardless of where people shake out on all these various debates, like, everything doesn't always have to turn into a social media debate, and everybody on social media doesn't have to use that platform to chastise others or criticize or browbeat others into their way of thinking. And that's really what it was largely. It felt like, just like you said, people either, you know, having their conspiracy theories or guilting other people into their conspiracy theories. I've seen people say, you know, this is what he gets for staying in the hood. And you know, most rappers get killed in the hood, and that's why he got killed, and that's why you got to stay out the hood or leave, you know, you got to leave niggas alone, you got to leave, you know, you got to leave out the community and don't look back because this is what happens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. Like, I kind of, the whole thing is kind of unfortunate, and like I said, it's just very, a very, very public incident, a very, very public death, and again, it was in broad daylight. You know what I'm saying? It was not like he was found in his home or someplace else or something happened like that. It was violent. It was right in front of our face. And I think that kind of sparked this ongoing conversation about, to what your point was, basically nothing. It's like none of that stuff really matters in the grand scheme. I don't know how long I'm going to be before I'm able to get over this. I don't know if I'll ever get over it. You know what I mean? Because I like I said, I was a very, very legitimate Nipsey Hussle fan. And you've heard his music on this podcast before. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was not prepared for this, obviously. And, you know, I feel like I'm still going to continue to grieve his passing as my wife did. My wife and I have done. It just doesn't strike me as anything that's going to go away anytime soon. And when you factor in not just what he meant as a musician, but everything else that we've discussed tonight, yeah, it's going to be a long time before hip hop recovers and before I personally recover from this. And I feel like you feel the same way.
Absolutely. To be honest, I haven't cried over the situation. Yeah, I wouldn't blame anybody who did. My eyes have definitely welled up on more than one occasion. You know, just, you know, not even, you know, sometimes watching something, sometimes just thinking about it. You know, this is a very, you know, surreal kind of moment. And I will say that, you know, even though I lived through the death of Tupac and Biggie, I didn't have quite the same connection to them that I have in this instance. You know, and even though that I was of that era, you know, I still feel a different kind of connection to this. And it's not just because of my proximity. And I feel like everything I did not understand about Tupac fans, so to speak, before, about, you know, like, I totally get it now. You know, it's like, I totally understand it. You know, like, you know, people wanting to, you know, defend his honor. You know, I want to jump in the comments when I see crazy stuff. You know, and I never really feel that way. But at the same time, though, I know what he was about, and I know what his legacy stood for. And that, you know, they just had people besmirching it just for clicks and likes. You know, it's reprehensible. It really is just disgusting. And, you know, and even if you did have taken issue with, you know, something about his life, you know, something he said, something he did, something, you know, something he was affiliated with, if you didn't like it, is now really the time? You know, he's not even, his body isn't even in the ground yet. You know, God rest his soul. You know, at the same time, I just look at this now and I think, okay, I get it now. I see why Tupac fans you know, I see why they are the way they are, you know, and I mean that in the most, you know, loving way possible.
One thing I can say is that for whatever it's worth, just in the smallest kind of minuscule thing way possible of understanding this within the context of the grand scheme of life and family and friendship and community and everything that Nip stood for, Nipsey's Hussle's legacy is unbreakable, and his legacy and impact will always be remembered by me personally, by you, by the Hicks family, and by HipHopSportsSupport.com. He will always be a legend here in this little corner of the internet, this little corner of social media, in our hearts. You know what I'm saying? He's always going to be a champion. Always. Always. I love you, Nipsey Hussle. I miss you. God bless you and your family. I'd hope I meet you someday, because you were a powerful, powerful brother, man, and a great artist and a truth teller and somebody who really cared about his people from the bottom of his heart. And that means something to me. It means a lot to me. So rest easy, Nip. Rest in power. We love you. I'm just going to leave it there.
We love you.
I'm just going to leave it right there, man. We do have about 20 minutes left, and I did want to save a little bit of time to talk some NBA basketball, man, because it's kind of been the way it is. But I have written about the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James. They're out of the playoffs, and, you know, we being Clevelanders, first and foremost, we have a complicated, complex relationship with LeBron. That's how I tend to view it anyway. But you now are a Cleveland or a Northeast Ohio transplant in L.A., much like LeBron is. What's going on out there, man? What are people saying about LeBron and the Lakers, and what's been the feeling in Los Angeles? Are people still holding out hope that they're going to turn this thing around, or is this thing just a flaming pile of garbage that, you know, is not going to get any better anytime soon, and people are just pessimistic about the whole thing?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, the situation here in L.A. with the Lakers is, you know, from a fan's perspective, you know, it's about as, you know, as stressful as you could probably, you know, imagine it being at the moment. You know, when I talk to people, you know, looking back at when there was just the prospect of LeBron even coming to L.A., there was a split at that time. It was a fractured fan base, even at that, because there was people who were like, wow, he's the greatest player in the NBA. I was sure it would be great to have him on our team. And at the same breath, I also met just as many fans that had no interest in LeBron ever wearing the purple and gold. And
that's insane to me.
It is. It is. You know, I don't personally understand it, but, you know, I don't understand why you wouldn't want the best player in the game on your team. But, you know, I guess a lot of it had to do with their allegiances to Kobe. Everybody that seemed to have that train of thought, they typically had, a big heart off of Kobe, and that was usually a part of the reason.
I'm glad you said that. I told you this the other day, and I think I put this on Twitter, as a matter of fact, at HHS Report. The greatest accomplishment of Kobe Bryant's career since 2010 was LeBron James missing the playoffs this year. Like, that's the number one thing that people are hanging their hat on. Like, it's almost like Kobe came out of retirement and somehow did something, when in actuality, he didn't do nothing. You know what I'm saying? He didn't do anything himself. But LeBron missed the playoffs, and all people couldn't wait to pile on LeBron. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm one of the few people out there that have, like, an objective vantage point of LeBron and you know what I'm saying? Because maybe once upon a time you could have argued that I was not objective about him. Then he left Cleveland. And then it was kind of all hatred and everything else. And, you know, I wanted him to fail at every possible thing that he tried to do. And then he comes back to Cleveland and he makes good, and he writes the letter, and everybody's back in everybody's good graces. And he does, like, the little thing at the Akron Stadium. I'm back, you know, all that stuff. He comes back for 4 years. He takes us to 4 straight finals. He wins us a title. Cleveland hadn't seen a title in over half a century in any sport. And he exercised all those demons. before leaving again. And so then, you know, so now it's kind of like, well, where does LeBron stand in the eyes of Clevelanders, or at least in my own opinion and in my own eyes? And it's just like, I view LeBron, I feel like, more objectively than most. I think that anybody who doesn't recognize that the Lakers season turned dramatically when LeBron got injured for a month is fooling themselves. And I feel like so many people are doing that. Like they're just acting as though him being injured for a month doesn't matter. And it's like, no, dog, he was out for a month with an injury. Like, if you take Giannis off the Bucks for a month, I'm not saying that they don't make the playoffs, but if you did that in December, it would shape their season dramatically. It would look dramatically different. You know what I mean? We've seen what Steph looks like off the Warriors. The Warriors are as loaded as any team in the league. You take Steph off them, they're not the same team. They're dropping games to average or below average ball clubs when Steph's not in the lineup because of what he means to that team. You can't just take the best player off of a team, let alone the best player in the league, arguably, off the team and not expect there to be them to fall back to the pack a little bit. So especially as competitive as the West is, that stuff, that's relevant. And I don't see why people don't seem to factor that in.
You know, and I think that is the greatest question here in, you know, I guess, you know, in LA right now is, you know, there's a conflicting conversation going around just about who, you know, where do you point the blame in this situation? You know, you look at the cake doesn't come out right. You know, you start looking at the ingredients. All right, what was the bad ingredient here? And, you know, some people are looking at LeBron. Some people are looking at, you know, Luke Walton. And other people are looking at management. Some people are looking at the bench players. Some people are looking at just how the roster was composed. And some people are looking at the injuries. You know, and the truth of the matter is that it's all the above.
Or LeVar Ball somehow.
Or LeVar Ball somehow. He's always an omnipresent factor in this as well.
So the Lakers, you know, the Lakers are 36-44 as of this recording. They, I believe, are fourth in their division. They are 11th in the Western Conference, and they are already mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. Brandon Ingram has been shut down for the season. Lonzo Ball has been shut down for the season. LeBron James has been shut down for the season. This is a really ugly end to the season for the Lakers. I personally believe that there's enough blame to go around. But the one thing I'll start off by saying is, and this has been a huge point of emphasis that I've wanted to make continuously, is that everybody was so quick to trash the Cleveland Cavaliers management over the course of the last 4 years. It's so fashionable, and it was so cliche to just blame everything on Dan Gilbert and the Cavs front office for making mistakes, for fumbling away the greatest player in the league twice. You know what I mean? That's just been this. It's been such a common narrative that people have bought into, and that Cleveland is a bunch of idiots. And I'm just here to say that we know now that that's not the case. Not to say that the Cavs were perfect and that their front office is perfect and that they never made mistakes, because they certainly did. But they were never, ever as bad as the general consensus seems to believe. The national media seems to believe that the Cavs front office and ownership group is just a bunch of bumbling idiots. And what we know now is that LeBron James, A, is difficult. There's a lot of baggage that comes along with LeBron. We also learned this year that Kyrie Irving is difficult, and there's a lot of baggage that comes along with Kyrie Irving. So you manage to put those two factors together, throw in the fact that Kevin Love is consistently injured, and he had his own mental health issues that he was going through, and the Cavs had a head coach last year that had to take a sabbatical because he was so mentally drained by having to manage all these personalities. Not to mention you have your starting shooting guard throwing soup at assistant coaches and stuff like that. You can't blame all this on the Cavs. J.R. Smith was erratic before he got to Cleveland. LeBron James and Kyrie Irving have been difficult since they left Cleveland. Kevin Love is still in Cleveland, and he was hurt for a significant portion of this year. That's not all on management, y'all. Okay? It's not. So I'm happy. I feel vindicated in that, you know, we're able to look back and say, you know what? The Cavs stink this year. They have the second worst record in the NBA right now, or tied for it. But you know what? Number one, they were supposed to. But beyond that, we know now that they're not nearly as bad as people made them out to be. I mean, I feel like that's been proven. We saw all these leaks coming from the Cavs organization last year. It was one leak about this. It was a leak about Tyronn Lue. It was a leak about this coach. It was a leak about that. It was a leak about this. It was a leak about that. And we used to sit back, me, you, and our cousins, we used to sit back and be like, yo, what is up with all these leaks coming out of the Cavs organization? Like, loose lips sink ships. Didn't nobody ever teach them that? And how annoying was that as a fan to be the topic on First Take every single morning that the Cavs were in trouble because of this or that, or that their management had done this and that, and that all these leaks kept coming out about our team, but nobody else's team had all these leaks coming out. Well, guess who's got all the leaks this year? The Lakers, right? The Cavs don't have that many leaks coming out this year. I'm not saying it's been perfect, but they haven't had half as many leaks this year about the team struggling or the roster or management or whatever as it did last year. But this year, all of a sudden, all the leaks are coming out of L.A. and Luke Walton's on the hot seat in November and all this other stuff. And Jeannie Buss was about to trade so-and-so, and Magic didn't want to draft Lonzo Ball, and all this other stuff that we're hearing, you know, just all these other crazy leaks coming out left and right. They just had one this past week. I can't even remember what it was, but there was another one that came out recently. And we see all this stuff coming out of the Lakers camp. And what's the common denominator? LeBron James and Clutch Sports. Am I right?
Absolutely.
I mean, I just feel like this is a clutch thing, man. I feel like this is my personal opinion. I'm not basing this on anything substantive or, you know, I don't have any real sourcing on any of this, of course. But I'm just saying, from my vantage point, I believe that Rich Paul and Clutch Sports has been trying, and through the, you know, under the direction of LeBron James, has been trying to control so much of not only just the Anthony Davis trade that failed, but just any type of narrative they want out there, anything that they want, you know, if they want to throw Luke Walton under the bus, if they want to throw Magic under the bus, anything that's been coming out of that camp that's been negative, I feel like Clutch Sports has been behind it, because we saw it in Cleveland. We saw all this stuff coming out of Cleveland, and we haven't seen that this year. Where are all the leaks about Channing Frye and Colin Sexton? We haven't seen them. You know what I'm saying? But we see all these leaks coming out of Los Angeles now. And I feel like it's just been Rich Paul trying to, you know, from his ivory tower, trying to do whatever he needs to do to control the game like a puppet master. He and LeBron together. And he's trying to work all the back channels, and he's using the media to do it. But it's backfired on him. And now we have a situation where people might not even want to come play with LeBron anymore. Is that right?
Oh, it seems like it's been the backlash of a lot of this. It seems like when you look at the spotlight, you look at, you know, how many players, you know, historically have been processed out by LeBron throughout the years because it just weren't big enough for whatever reason. And you look at, all the leaks that are coming out of LA, and you look at the Anthony Davis debacle, you know, all this points back to LeBron. It points back to Clutch Sports. And, you know, this isn't based off of any, factual documentation of anything or sourcing per se. But at the same time, though, when you look at just the volume of it alone, you know, I think that speaks to just, it has to be coming from somewhere, you know. And it seems like the common denominator, to your point, a lot of this is Clutch Sports.
I mean, I just don't see how anybody could come to any other conclusion than that. I mean, wherever LeBron goes, the circus seems to follow. So don't sit here and blame Cavs management, if you know what I mean, when there's a circus.
Exactly.
By the way, LeBron James now, if we look at totality of his career, the bulk of his career is behind him. We know that. And if you look at it, you know, even though you could argue, some people are arguing now he doesn't make anybody better, but even if he did make people better, what we know now is that he never really was that great of a recruiter. And I think the biggest reason for that is because he never wanted to commit to Cleveland. But the bulk of his career was played in Cleveland. He never wanted to commit to Cleveland. Nobody else was going to commit to Cleveland before he did, because the attraction of playing in Cleveland was playing with LeBron. LeBron, I think, is smart enough to know that, but yet he never cared enough to extend himself beyond the bare minimum with each deal that he signed. And as a result, star players could never get brought in, and then they blame Cleveland for that. But what do we see when he was first in Cleveland? His teammate was Carlos Boozer. The Cavs tried to relinquish Boozer out of an extension in order to sign him to a long-term max deal, or maybe not a max deal, but a long-term deal. And he ended up, as soon as he got some more money, he ended up taking that money and leaving. And so he didn't even opt to choose playing with LeBron over the money and playing in Utah. He said, I'm out of here. I'd rather have the money than play with LeBron. That's essentially what he did, you know. Then we saw a few years later, the Cavs had all this cap space that they had acquired, and they tried to get Ray Allen, they tried to get Michael Redd, they tried to get Joe Johnson, and they failed at all three, and they wound up with Larry Hughes and Danielle Marshall and Damon Jones. That's who they wound up with. And then LeBron ends up, you know, the Cavs try to bring in some more players in. They try to bring in Trevor Ariza. They try to bring in Ron Artest. These guys didn't want to commit to Cleveland because LeBron didn't commit to Cleveland. So then, and then there was speculation that the Cavs tried to trade for Amari Stoudemire, but that deal fell through because they didn't want to pull the trigger on giving up a young asset, which at the time was J.J. Hickson. Now, we can look back at that and laugh, but the point is that they had a lot of belief in J.J. Hickson as a young asset, and they didn't want to give that away when they knew that they didn't really have a commitment outside of LeBron for that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you could include that potentially. But what we know then is that he goes to Miami. He does a better job recruiting there. He signs a 6-year deal with a 4-year a player option after 4 years, which is something that he never gave the Cavs. They recruit some decent role players to play with him there. But when he comes back to Cleveland, Love and Kyrie are already in the fold pretty much. But what he couldn't do was he couldn't attract Paul George, you know, or he couldn't because the Cavs didn't want to give up the necessary draft picks to make that deal happen or to give up the future assets because they didn't know if LeBron was coming back. So they didn't want to give up the assets or the future assets to get Paul George because Paul George had a contract extension coming up. And so with Paul George having the ability to leave Cleveland, they didn't want to give up those assets and then have Paul George and LeBron leave. So, right. And now we go to L.A. They don't get Kawhi Leonard. They don't get Paul George. Now they can't trade for Anthony Davis. So now we're stuck with the speculation of LeBron being unable to land any of those guys. And then whether or not after the debacle of a season that we saw, plus LeBron showing some age and attrition for the first time, they may not be able to get anybody. You know, as I look at the free agency list, Kenny, we're talking Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, Kemba Walker, Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins, Tobias Harris, Nikola Vucevic, and Chris Middleton are all free agents this year. You got to figure the Lakers are going to get somebody, but if that somebody is just Kemba Walker and Vucevic or Tobias Harris and Chris Middleton, is that enough to get them over the hump? And will that satisfy Laker fans, do you think?
Well, there's a lot that goes into that. You know, I think that it depends on who they're able to get, obviously. And, you know, at the same time, though, they have done themselves no services here in this season. You know,
oh,
when you look at the way that when you look at just the way that LeBron has treated the rest of the roster, you know, the young talent that they had on this roster, you know, these guys I don't think that nothing like that would endear the treatment of the players that have been here. Nothing of that would be endearing to a potential free agent, you know? And you look at just, you know, LeBron giving you side eyes every moment and looking, you know, standing over there in the corner and looking ominous with Rob Pelinka and Magic, you know, all these other things going on. You know, it just doesn't seem like a situation where if I'm a free agent, I'm going to feel like I can come in here and I can survive and I can thrive properly, you know? So that's my concern. It's just that I would not want to have a situation where you have somebody like a free agent come in and not feel like they can thrive, you know? Or if you're somebody like a Kyrie, or you're somebody like Anthony Davis, but if you're somebody like Kawhi Leonard, you know, how can you feel like you can come in and thrive when all you see is, LeBron treating his current teammates like the chopped liver, you know? So, and again, even when you look at somebody like Kyrie, and you look at, he was traded back on a championship team, you know, because he was that disgusting in putting up with, you know, the intensity of dealing with the scrutiny of playing alongside LeBron James. So, I just don't know exactly what they'll be able to land. And again, with that window closing on him, you know, I just hope that they'll be able to do things in a way that, you know, if they want to move forward, that they'll be able to land the players that would be able to move forward there.
Here's my thing. I could give a crap if the Lakers crash and burn. In fact, I think it would be fairly entertaining if they crash and burn because the Lakers fans, although the Lakers have been a great franchise, they've been the most entitled group of fans in basketball for a long, long time. And so for them to get some a little comeuppance, I'd have no problem seeing that. And LeBron, who's been treating, you know, every stop of his career just like expendable chess pieces. That's how he's kind of seemingly treated a lot of stuff off the court. You know, if he got a little comeuppance, I'd be okay with that too. The problem I have mm-hmm. though is when we lose sight of his greatness. Like, people want to now discredit him for everything he's accomplished in his career because they missed the playoffs this year. Isn't it funny how so many people tried to trash LeBron for his finals record being 3-6? But now all of a sudden that he misses the playoffs, they're trashing him for missing the playoffs. To me, it's like, you can't trash him for missing the playoffs when you trashed him before for his finals record. Because when you're trashing him for his finals record, you're not giving him credit for making it through the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? Not only did he make the playoffs every year, he made the finals every year. And people didn't want to give him credit for that because he had a losing finals record. Well, now all of a sudden he misses the playoffs and everybody's clowning him for that. And it's like, how was that fair? Because before, you're telling me that the road to the finals doesn't matter. All that matters is that you get to the finals and win it. So if that's the case, it shouldn't matter that he missed the playoffs this year. But the LeBron haters, they don't care about none of that. They're just going to continue to shit on him any chance that they get, which is what I don't understand. And I don't understand this Kobe Bryant revisionist history. Kobe would never do this. Kobe would never, like, we saw Kobe quit in Phoenix, okay? We saw Kobe demand a trade from LA, okay? Like, let's not paint Kobe out to be some kind of saint. He's an amazing player. He's not a saint, and he's not better than LeBron James. But I just personally, like, the revisionist history around Kobe drives me up the wall, and the way people are using this event to then try to discredit everything LeBron has done. You know how many people want to sit here and say that, well, LeBron went to the finals 8 straight years in the East and he played 1 year in the West and he missed the playoffs. That just goes to show you that his entire career, you could chalk it up to him being in the weak Eastern Conference. And it's like, are you out of your mind? Like, people are morons. They're morons. It's like, if you want to say he had an easier road in the East in general, yeah, that's fine. But that doesn't mean you get to stand here and discredit everything that he accomplished. You know what I mean? Because he played 1 year in the West in a year when he got hurt and some of his teammates also got hurt. And now you want to hold all that against him when they were in the playoff mix when he was healthy at the beginning of the season? Come on. You know what I mean? Like, that's the stuff that I don't understand. I don't know who the Lakers are going to get. I wrote a piece on the website basically saying that I would bet, because of the Lakers' history and who they are, that they're going to get somebody pretty decent. Maybe it's Kemba Walker and they get another piece and a couple shooters. I think that's enough to get them in the playoffs next year with a healthy LeBron. Then maybe they make a deal for AD, or maybe AD comes the following year as a free agent, and now you have a 36-year-old LeBron, a 35-year-old, 36-year-old LeBron, but you still got Kemba Walker, Anthony Davis, and a couple shooters. Like, that's not a bad scenario. So I would still bet on the Lakers bouncing back, but I still kind of take some enjoyment out of seeing LeBron and the Lakers suffer a little bit. I'm not going to front. We're out of time, though. Thanks for joining us, Kenny. Thank you for the insights and the perspective about Los Angeles and what they're thinking and feeling regarding LeBron and the Lakers, and more importantly, Nipsey Hussle in that situation. Hey, this was a real difficult podcast, so I appreciate you coming through and helping us process this tragedy, man. But was there anything else you wanted to add before we signed off?
I want to say rest in peace to, you know, Nipsey Hussle, you know, prayers, condolences to his family and loved ones in this community. I would hope that we could, you know, kind of, you know, take this as an opportunity to, you know, support his clothing line. You know, I think that, you know, recently, as in the midst of, you know, the backlash about Gucci and some of these other clothing lines and what they represent, as a community, we're looking around saying, well, we wish we had somebody that represented us. This is a current clothing line. It's relevant. It's right now. It was made by one of our very own. You know, it's 100% black-owned business. Like, I don't see why we can't support this and make this the next big thing, you know? And I think that would be a great way to honor him and his legacy. I know they're talking about renaming the street after him, and that sounds like a great idea. But I think what I would love to see L.A. do would be to posthumously give him the keys to the city. I think that would be a great way to honor
that. And that's a song that he did, the keys to the city. He actually did a second version of that on Victory Lap. Maybe getting the keys to the city would be his victory lap. So, again, man, God bless Nip and his family. I didn't enjoy doing this podcast, but I enjoyed talking about Nipsey Hussle and everything that he meant to our culture and our community. And you see now the impact that guy had, man. It was profound. Rest in power, Nipsey Hussle. We love y'all. We out of here. Peace.